Welcome back to the Profit Your Knowledge podcast. Today, we are talking about brand strategy, and I have just the expert on the show today. This is Brian Orr. This is what he does. He's been in the entrepreneur space for quite a while now, or just like in terms of building. He's over 2.5 decades of experience in the entrepreneurial world. And his career path was from doing collaborations with big names like HBO, Armani, Exchange, and Nintendo even. So dude has a lot of understanding, worked with like, you know, big brands and whatnot, and just understanding branding and what it really is. So hopefully we can simplify branding, what it is, and how we can implement this regardless of what stage you're at. This is huge. If you're just starting out, get your best foot forward. Or if you've been in the game for a bit and it's time for a rebrand, this will be awesome too. How you doing today, Brian?
James, what is up, man? You just completely outed me on my age and everything. You just like, I got an old dude here.
We're talking to him. You gave it to me. That's awesome.
Like, oh my goodness. Yeah. I've been around for a little while.
You're seasoned.
Happy to talk to you today. So yeah.
Yeah, dude. Brand strategy. It's huge. Branding. It's a lot. It's kind of everything. You think about Nike, you know, it's the first one I can think of in my head, but like these big brands, you know,
it's the one I use most often as a reference.
Apple's another one. Like they all have great branding. And what's interesting about them too, is I feel like it's very simple, like their logo, you know, all of them, it's nothing crazy, you know? So, I'd love just to hear, you know, first off a bit about your story, about how you kind of got to where you are today. So what first, you know, made you decide to become an entrepreneur and start sharing your knowledge on the internet and turning that into a business? And then, you know, how did you kind of get to where you are today?
Yes. So it's actually kind of it kind of evolved the other way, but let me touch on Nike real quick, just to give you guys some nuggets right now. When you talk about the things that you recognize, as far as Nike goes, you recognize the logo, you recognize the swoosh, you recognize the Just Do It. But when I develop brand strategy, that's essentially like step 11 and 12 in the process, right? Step one in the process is understanding who you are and who your audience is. And well, that's kind of step 1 through 7. And if you think about Nike and you think about the archetype of Nike and who they are and what they represent, Nike represents the hero. Nike represents the champion, the victory.
Right.
And when you buy a pair of Nikes, as opposed to buying a pair of XYZ brand, you buy the Nike because you want to feel like the hero. Right. So Nike as itself represents the hero and the champion, but who they sell to, their audience, is actually the everyman, the guys like you and me, the normal people walking around who just want to feel like they can be like Mike. Or I'm dating just myself again, or just do it, or dunk potentially like LeBron one day, right? Or run as fast as, you know, whoever their track athlete is. So Nike's brand is not actually the logo or even the slogan. Their brand is you too, the everyman, can also be a hero or a champion if, you know, you wear our clothes or run in our sneakers. And that's in effect what brand actually is. It's how do you feel, or how does the audience or the consumer feel about our product or our service? And what does it mean to them? And that's really what brand is.
I really like that. Branding is the message that you're trying to portray in everything. I'm not a branding expert, by the way, so correct me if I'm wrong, but this is just my understanding. I think about branding.
Here's an easy word for you. Reputation. That's what brand is.
Oh, yeah.
Brand is the business version of your reputation.
Totally.
What do people think about you? What do your coworkers feel about you? What is your neighborhood, you know, your neighbors, your family? Brand is that. It's your reputation. What do people say about you when you're not in the room?
Yeah.
That's what brand is. What the logo, what most people consider the idea of brand is the identity, the stamp,
colors,
or the slogan, the colors, right? But all of that stuff are just representations of your reputation.
Yeah. I think about branding as like, from my understanding, it's like a vibe kind of your brand too. And like a feeling that you get, which ties into what you're talking about with reputation, you know, and that's like when you're thinking about the logo, You're thinking about the colors. You're thinking about how your brand feels when people interact with it. I think about like Alex Catani. She's a big marketer person, really big on copywriting. Her like membership community is called the Copy Posse. And she has really good branding, but it's very like bright. It's fun. Her energy is very like uplifting. And I feel like when I've helped people kind of with some of the branding stuff that, you know, I help people build their business and kind of, that's what I tell them is like, make a list of words of how you want people to feel when they interact with your business, when your website, with your content. And if you can make everything kind of represent, like, I want it to be fun. I want it to be maybe electric or like calming, you know, there's different feelings that you would like someone to experience when they touch with your brand, then your writing, your video, the content, the pace you speak, everything fits those kind of feelings. And that's kind of what I've learned over the years about branding.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, one of the exercises we do is that humanizing your brand with three adjectives, right? Exactly what you're saying. What are three things? What are three adjectives that describe your brand? And then, you know, you have to remember the key is not only just who you think you are as an individual or as a business, but it's your audience. Like Nike doesn't actually sell to heroes. They wear it. Like, you know, other professional athletes will, of course, wear Nike, but their sales come from, you know, the everyday person. Mm-hmm. So it's not just even who you are, but who your audience is. It's two major components.
Yeah. And thinking about what they really want. And because they want, you know, people, the everyday people, we want to feel like a superhero or we want to improve mm-hmm. or something. And that Nike knows that. So they're going to position it that way. Another brand that comes to my mind, I'd love to hear, you know, on this topic, we're talking about Nike a lot, but Red Bull. What are your thoughts on Red Bull?
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull is a similar kind of, I was actually going to go a little bit different and go with Disney, but let's think about Red Bull. So when I hear Red Bull, I know the slogan, right, gives you wings. They associate themselves with extreme. So they have motocross, they have the guy who jumped from the space shuttle or whatever he did.
Snowboarding.
Right? They have all these associations. Yeah, snowboarding. So they associate themselves with energy, with extreme, you know. So you think, okay, if I want to be extreme, if I want to have wings, if I want to break out of who I am in my normal day and my normal state of being, I'm going to have myself a Red Bull and that's going to make the change for me, right? So in effect, their audience might be the same person, but what they're trying to, themselves, their brand, their reputation is a little bit of a different. They're like the adventurer, the wild person or whatever, but the audience is more or less the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I'm like, my brain's turning on different companies now. What about Disney? You were going to say something about Disney?
Well, I mean, just as a parent, you know, Disney, and I grew up as a Disney kid watching all the movies and stuff. Disney, you know, people think Disney, well, you tell me, what do you think when you think of Disney?
What do I think? Like, what kind of words pop into my brain about it? Or
yeah, like what is, I mean, Disney? What is their company? What are they selling?
So here's what comes to my mind. My girlfriend and I, we have a Disney Plus account. We're not children, you know, we're adults, but we still enjoy sometimes sitting down and watching Disney movies, whether it's like an old one or even a newer one, because I always think about, you know, vibe. That's kind of what I'm thinking about. And you know, I'm not really into an action movie per se, even though there is action in Disney. So I'm thinking about kind of that energy of it's fun, it's playful, it's kind of relaxed too. And that's what I'm thinking about. It's just like, it's an adventure too. We just watched Ratatouille, amazing movie. It's like so good. And I haven't seen it in so long. And we just were watching it and laughing and stuff. And it's just kind of, it's playful, I feel. And it was just kind of the energy that we wanted. So that's kind of what I think about.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And the key word that they use most often is magic.
You're right.
And if you think about the magician creating something, there's illusion, there's creativity, there's playfulness, there's the idea of feeling like a child. You know, you even qualify it. We're not children, but we watch it, you know?
So look inside.
Because it makes you, it makes you feel that way, right? You like the idea of a talking rat who can make soup, right? Like that's that kind of thing you know, you it's positioned so that you can bring your state of mind to the idea of magic and this sort of stuff that, you know, when you wish upon a star, like maybe it could happen one day in some far off fantasy world, and we lose ourselves in that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what they sell. They sell that type of feeling and emotion. And you just know if you're going to be associated with Disney, at least historically now, you know, they own 27 other brands, but historically, if you're associated with Disney, you're thinking of, you know, beds that can transport you through time and, or Mary Poppins or whatever, all of this sort of crazy stuff. And we love that, you know, we love that as humans to be able to, you know, lose ourselves in those fantasies. Yeah. And Disney's huge for that.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. Wow. So much to unpack here.
So that's the company. Those are company brands. That's what it is.
Well, what about like, okay. So yeah, these are obviously big brands, Disney, Red Bull, Apple, we didn't really dive into, but, oh my gosh, Nike was the other one. When it comes mm-hmm. to like a personal mm-hmm. brand, you know, someone like us, you know, we're coaches, we're mentors. We want to teach our knowledge and share it on online. Typically it's like coaches or speakers, experts, and that kind of stuff. When it comes to building like a smaller personal brand, what kind of things are similar? Are things different at all? Is it the same thing? What kind of advice would you give to someone who's thinking about really starting to focus on their branding in their business?
So I'll tell you a story from when I was first growing up. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a DJ. My sister would dance around in the house, my older sister and her friends. And I loved the idea of being able to help people through those kinds of emotions, whether they were dancing because they were happy or the wedding dance or whatever it was. I just love the idea of being able to control that element or at least provide that kind of relief for somebody. I had no idea how to play instruments. It was never really in my purview to I don't know, play guitar or keyboard or anything. And I grew up in New York and I just grew up listening to the DJs on the radio. So I always wanted to be a DJ. Well, when I finally got to around, I guess, 13, 14, I went to the pawn shop and I picked up some old turntables and a mixer, and I was going to be a DJ. And I found myself the best DJ. At this time, I had moved to North Carolina. So found myself the best DJ in the city and got him to mentor me. As he was mentoring me and I was watching what he was actually doing, I was like, man, I'm never going to be able to do this. Like, I am not as good as this guy. I like technically, right? So now I'm thinking, I don't think I have the voice to be the radio guy. And I don't think that I have the skills to be the turntable guy, but I still want to be a DJ. So what am I supposed to do? And that is when I discovered, although I didn't know it at the time, the ideas of strategy and positioning. And what I did at that time was say, how can I still do this thing, even though I can't compete here and I can't compete here? So I carved out essentially my own path that nobody else was doing at the time, which was catering more towards my audience, which at the time was, you know, nightclubs and bars and stuff like that to begin with. But then it moved further and further into brands, into larger nightclubs, into other countries. And ultimately, I ended up DJing for many, many, many years. I've DJed in many, many countries around the world. And I've provided, you know, sonic branding, audio branding for some of the companies that you mentioned earlier, with regards to playlists, with regards to programming in the retail stores, with regards to red carpet events and other types of things, because I positioned myself in a way that was to service my audience or these major brands when everyone else was just trying to still be the best on the two turntables. So that's how I discovered, well, I didn't really discover it. I just sort of did it, but I realize now what I was doing then, the ideas of creating a unique positioning for yourself and carving out a unique space in the market. And that is probably the top advice that I could give to, you know, differentiation for yourself, your product, your service, or whatever that is.
Do you still DJ?
Sometimes for fun.
Just in the backyard, a little barbecue.
Yeah, sometimes.
Still got sometimes. The turntable.
I still have all my gear. I, you know, I play here and there just because it's still super fun for me. I still have that passion of like, you know, if I could, I've always, you know, the Eagles song, Hotel California.
Classic.
And they say, you know, some dance to remember, some dance to forget. And it's just something that I've always loved, the idea of transformation, you know, evolution, being able to change from one thing to the other, development, you know, whatever word you want to use. But through music, I've always been able to do that. And it's been instant where I've been able to see the reaction from people. And it's just such a, like a core, you know, passion for me that I don't know that, I mean, I might be 80 years old and still spinning tunes. I have no idea.
I think you will be, Brian. Yeah. I mean, that's like, I'm a musician too. So I think that's so cool about music is that, you know, you could be super like so old, you can't like run miles or anything. You're physically not there, but you can still play music. It's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Creative outlet. You can still DJ. So I am curious because you mentioned that kind of finding that thing that makes you unique. I think that's an art form in and of itself because, you know, especially when people want to start sharing their knowledge online, they want to start coaching and stuff. I hear it all the time from people. I want to teach XYZ relationships, fitness, whatever, but there's so many people teaching it. It's saturated. How am I going to stand out? What was it for you that you found out? You're like, I'm not going to be able to compete with these guys over here, turntables, compete with these guys with this. What was kind of your USP, your unique selling proposition that made you unique and helped you grow in that field?
You mean as a DJ or in consulting or in what?
I feel like there's common threads, right? Because you were starting to DJ and then you finally got to live that dream of DJing.
Yeah.
What was it about DJing that made you different and then it kind of helped you live into that dream? And then how is that translated into other stuff, business related?
Yeah. So as far as DJing goes, I think the primary lever, the thing that changed everything was not trying to be the headliner with the spotlight on me, right? So it took a lot of pressure away from having to perform to like this unbelievable technical ability. The guy who I learned under was like a trick set guy. Like he would, I don't know, it's hard if you don't see, you're not seeing the video, if you're listening on audio, but he would do like spinning backwards underneath the table, like all sorts of crazy, crazy stuff. He was like performing with the instruments, like with the turntables, right? And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So this was when DJ booths were hidden away, tucked away somewhere on the second floor. And this was right when they started becoming onto main stage. And he was like, the DJ was the show, right? And I was like, man, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's
right.
So what I saw was an opportunity to take the pressure off me, the spotlight off me, and reflect it back into the audience and back even into the business owners. And, you know, I would always shout out the bartenders, right? Like, you know, even stupid thing, take care of your bartenders, right? Like that kind of thing. And I would grow this like reputation, right? My brand was that I would take care of the venues by not keeping all the attention on me. I didn't want everybody to just be staring at me all night on stage. I would deflect that in one way or another, even rhythmically, even throughout the set. You know, you can't play 4 hours of just unbelievable songs. You know, eventually people are going to stop dancing.
Right.
But I don't want them to stop dancing because they choose to. I want them to stop dancing because I chose to.
Right.
And the way that I did that was in my programming. So I would, you know, kind of roller coaster the set through the night, right? Because there's no breaks. It's not like a band where, like, you know, we're taking 5 minutes. So the music's still playing, but I have to do that musically in a way that tells them, okay, I'm going to go take a break and go get some drinks so we can feed the bar, but not in a way where they're like, oh, this DJ sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was always kind of doing that dance. And I think, sorry, I'm getting a little long winded on this answer, but I think that the idea of understanding who my audience actually was, which was the patrons plus the club owners And or we can go further into the brands, the marketing people for the companies, who I was actually providing for when I was doing an event for Nintendo, right? Like who, what are they needing me to get out of this event? And it wasn't to be a spotlight DJ, right? I needed to provide a certain type of audio experience for the people who were there for whatever reason they were there for ultimately what Nintendo was trying to get out of the event, right? Like their store launch in Times Square or whatever. So the way that that carries forward now, I think is, you know, like I said, Nike is a hero, but they don't make money by selling to heroes. They make money by selling to, you know, the everyday person. So you have to understand who you are. You have to have self-awareness. You have to know where your skills are and your capabilities are. But to grow in business, you have to understand your audience, what they need, what they want, what's going to keep them coming back, and what's going to provide you, you know, provide to them the reputation that you need for them to talk well about you to their friends. Mm. And when you serve that, I think that that's probably the biggest link between the two. And I think when you serve that, that's an opportunity for great success.
Yeah. Oh, knowing your audience is massive. When I was building, like, I share the story all the time, but building digital products, trying to sell them on passively and stuff, you know, with funnels and things like that, couldn't sell them to save my life. And it was like six different digital products and funnels. And I finally got a slap in the face from my mentors about customer research and market research and hearing what they actually care about and building products around that. Find the demand and then supply the demand, not supply and then demand. And it's demand and supply. And I did that. Mm-hmm. And that led into creating better emails, creating better sales page, creating a better product that they actually cared about, because I knew that it was something that they wanted instead of me just shooting from the hip being like, I hope that they like this, or I hope that I'm speaking their language. It's like, I know I'm speaking your language, 100%. No doubt in my mind.
Right.
And that was a game changer. And that's what led to finally starting to sell products like literally in my sleep. So it's so big and it's huge with branding, because like Nike, they know who their audience is. They're not selling to the big athletes. They leverage big athletes with sponsorships and they take care mm-hmm. of their athletes and stuff, but they're really selling to the average person. And everything is structured around those desires that that person has to be greater, to just do it, you know, to level up, to play like Jordan or like Mike, you know, it's like stuff like that.
Yeah, even in a lot of their commercials, you just see it's just kids on, you know, playing basketball. And it's like the idea is if you keep putting these reps in one day, you know, you could be that. But that's what their commercials are, too, at least for a long time. I mean, yeah, there's a lot more celebrity involved in things now. But yeah, I mean, it's positioned very strategically. It's not, none of that stuff is accidental.
Yeah. So as you've gained more experience helping like actual business owners and different businesses with their brand strategy, what do you feel has become more important to you and why?
When you say, what do I feel is more important?
In terms of like branding and that what they focus on that actually leads to like the best ROI.
Got you. Okay. So the way I'll tell you quickly, I do get long winded, so I'll be as quick as I can, how I ended up landing here. So I've been investing for many, many years, and I started investing in real estate, and I started investing more in small business directly. And as I'm underwriting business after business after business, I kept finding these same issues. And more often than not, the issues had a root in brand. It had a root in lack of clarity and lack of the ability to communicate their personal mission, as well as, you know, the communicate with the audience. So time and time and time again, I was like, no, I can't really invest in your business. Like this isn't, you know, and then I was asked over and over, like, can I pay you? Like, can you help me figure out how to make this better? Mm. And, you know, you should really be charging for this and that kind of thing. And I was like, I wonder if I can actually just make this another revenue stream where I just help people understand, you know, how to position themselves. And it was in that I really had the reflection back to what I did when I was a kid, right? And realizing what I did for all those years about strategy and about positioning. So you know, the thing that moves the needle the most, I think that people get very caught up in the thing that they're good at and not realizing that that's not always the thing that people are going to pay for. So as an example, I worked with a gym. I'll give you this one. So she was a personal trainer for, you know, a bunch of years. So the next logical step is to start a gym. And she started a gym, and eventually she was telling me, you know, I had no idea that I would be sweeping floors and doing spreadsheets and doing all this. And I'm not even working with clients anymore. And I said, yeah, because you're not a personal trainer anymore. You're now a gym owner.
Right.
It's different. You're doing something different. You have to get rid of all those ideas and all those things that you were doing as a trainer, and all of your roles and responsibilities are now changed. And this kind of leans into a little bit of coaching. I don't really do coaching. I'm much more of a problem solver. But
that's
just
what coaching
just,
is. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's more of a long-term thing. The way that I see coaching is more of a long-term thing, and there's like accountability, and I'm not really great at that. You know, I'm like, here, I'll tell you what's wrong, and I'll tell you how to fix it, and then just give me
it's
a call.
It's more consulting, but coaching,
yeah,
you
exactly.
Think of, well, coaching, I do coaching, and I'm very much
yeah.
like you. So it's still, I do a lot of consulting too, but a lot of it's like mental barriers that people have. For example,
yes.
You're going to raise your prices. That's scary. You know, if you're going to double your price or something because you're worth it and you can do it. But even still,
yes.
If it's like proof's in the pudding, do it. It's still like, oh, but what if people say no? And, you know,
yeah,
this
no,
whole
you're
mental
so,
thing.
You're so right. You're so right. I'm just, when the way I draw the distinction, because I say, like, I had that. Okay. So just real quickly about the
sure.
gym owner. The idea that what got you here is not going to get you there. And I think having that sort of self-awareness is probably the biggest needle mover, right? To answer that question as concisely as I can, with regards to price strategy. So there's another person who I worked with, and we decided, or I decided, that she was going to 4X her pricing, and she needed to, and it wasn't even an option. And she was terrified. And I said, talk to somebody about it. I'm not the one to talk to you about it. And that's really where I draw the distinction between myself as a consultant versus a coach. I say, you know, there's business people who can run you there. You're asking me what you need to do to change your business. And I'm telling
gotcha.
you need to 4X your price. And here's how we're going to go about doing that. And here's how you're going to position yourself. And here's how we're going to rebrand you. And then, but for the idea of, I need to know that I'm worth it, and I need to do, I'm like, I don't, you need to consult, or you need to speak with a coach about that, because they're going to cheer you on. And I'm not really the cheer you on kind of type.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it is very interesting, because it's like, well, it's also like the thing, what's the difference between a coach and a consultant or therapy? That's topic for a different day, but, okay. Yeah. I like everything that you're sharing here, Brian. I do have another question. Based on your career thus far, you know, with being an entrepreneur, what's something that you wish someone would have told you early on?
If I wish somebody would have told me early on, I mean, I can say something cheesy like buy more real estate. I would have done that long, long, long before I knew, before I discovered real estate. But, you know, with regards to operationally, I think probably shedding, like I was telling the gym owner, like what got you here is not going to get you there. I wish I knew that sooner, because I carry a lot of what I've done. And then I'm like, you know, I identify as that. It's part of my personality. And, you know, it's hard for me to let that go. I mean, even you asked, like, am I still DJing? And, you know, I'll DJ till I'm 80. But the truth is, you know, it's because I'm not out like trying to source deals or with regards to DJing. Like, people know me. I have a reputation in the industry. And if they, it's very easy for me to get, like, it doesn't take any effort. Right.
Right.
But if it did take effort, or even just the idea that I can still go back and do it, I don't know. That's honestly something that I've been trying to shed. I'm like, I need to eventually, like, I need to get rid of all of that stuff so I can, you know, 80-20 my mind, not only just my, what I'm doing every day, my workflow, but I need to get some of that out of my mind so that I can, you know, take this next step in my journey. And it's something I work on all the time. But I think that if you did it in this way, where like a little bar graph or whatever, and you have, you know, your 80-20 and you can shed your 80, well, now your 20 is your new 100%. And then you can shed your 80 again. You could keep, it's like infinite, right? It's like this infinite divisible item that you can continue to shed the stuff that's not working or the stuff that got you so far. So right. Yeah, I would absolutely wish that I was told to the shortest way, what got you here is not going to get you there.
Right. Yeah. Powerful advice, man. Brian, it's been great hanging out with you. Thank you so much for all the knowledge bombs and the observations about branding. That was really fun. Where can people learn more about you and get connected?
Sure. So my website is thebrianorr.com and all of my social media is thebrianorr, and it's thebrianorr. So anywhere on social, I'm mostly active on X and the website and hit me up. Maybe you'll see some old DJ videos or something lingering around.
Let's go.
There,
but, cool. I'll find one on YouTube. No.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. Out there. Cool. But James, thanks for having me, man. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate the conversation.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for hanging out. For the listener, get connected with Brian if you want to learn more about brand strategy for sure. I know we talked about a lot of stuff, but I think that, you know, when you're building out your brand, I love what you said about those kind of three words of
adjectives.
Emotions, three adjectives on how you want your brand to be represented in everything that you do. You know, if you're coaching people or you have digital products or you write a book or you make free content online, you have a podcast, whatever, fall in under those three words, those three adjectives, and make sure everything is in line with those. If fun is that, make sure everything has some fun to it. You know, you joke around, you have some light energy, whatever it is. Or if you want it to be laid back, like whatever, customize it how you want it to be and what's aligned with you. And just stick to it for the long run, but make sure all the colors, your logo, everything matches those. I think that that's probably like, if you could take one little thing from this, it would make a huge impact. It would be that. And even if you're doing branding or you've been in business for a bit, recalibrate. Think, does this fit kind of the energy? Like think about your adjectives and then look at your brand and be like, is it all aligned? You know, because if it is, I guarantee you'll see a lot of growth just from that. So biggest thing is that you actually do it. You pull out the pen and paper, you write it out. Implementation is your only superpower. So take what you learned here, get out there, make something happen. We will see you in the next one.